Good evening, everyone. Last week, we began the story of morphine, a pain-killing opioid drug that was isolated from the poppy plant. A scientist named Sir Turner isolated the drug around 1805, and in 1817, it began being sold to doctors as a new, highly potent drug to treat pain, as well as, ironically, a treatment for opium or alcohol addiction. Ironic, of course, because morphine was to cause its own severe addiction problems, much of which we'll discuss today. If you'll recall from last week, Sir Turner's discovery of morphine did not catch on for many years. He also warned of the possibility of addiction, and was concerned about the potential for abuse of his discovery. Unfortunately, the world at large did not heed his warnings. There are many reasons why this happened, but among them for sure is just that many illnesses still did not have real cures. It's been a recurring theme in the show that the bulk of scientific and medical progress really takes place in the late 1800s onward, and this meant that many illnesses did not have cures or real treatments yet. However, morphine did present a way to make patients feel better, even if the underlying cause wasn't actually being treated. I don't think that doctors were being unreasonably reckless or callous for the most part either, but more likely that many doctors were trying to make their patients feel better, and morphine proved a relatively easy way to do so. From a patient perspective, if you knew you could feel a lot better with just a quick shot, you'd probably want it too, and especially in the dire situations we're going to be talking about, I'd definitely be asking my doctor for things to deal with pain too. So let's look at one example of widespread morphine abuse. In the United States in the mid to late 1800s. Although Sir Turner was working in Germany, within 50 years, morphine was in widespread use across the globe. I'm not sure who first brought morphine to the United States, but I do know that the American Civil War accelerated its adoption. The Union Army alone issued about 10 million opium pills and some 2.8 million ounces of opium powders, leading to many people developing addictions and trying to treat their pain. It comes as little surprise that soldiers have a great need for painkillers. Those addictions would then be continued using morphine, which may have provided temporary relief, but was by no means any sort of long-term solution. Record-keeping of the time is spotty, but it was a rampant problem, with estimates of people with addictions in the hundreds of thousands, and it was worsened by our lack of scientific understanding around the issue. Addiction was often referred to as opium slavery, and often men who could not kick the habit were considered to simply lack willpower. For the record, modern science has shown addiction is much more complex than that, and is not something that can be so easily controlled. It wasn't just soldiers who were affected, though. In the late 1800s, 60% of opium addicts in the United States were actually women, who were regularly prescribed morphine for, well, almost anything. Menstrual cramps, morning sickness, or perceived mental disorders could all be supposedly treated with morphine, which often led to overuse and ultimately addiction. Overprescription of the drugs led to an epidemic, which is a story that we are unfortunately still familiar with today. By 1888, 15% of all prescriptions in Boston were for opiates, a large portion of which was for morphine. Just one illustration of how widespread the drug's use was. In the 1870s and 1880s, medical journals were filled with articles about morphine addiction, but getting the word out was not quite so easy. The dangers of overusing morphine were not clear early on, and teaching every doctor these dangers was a whole different story. Keep in mind that this is in a time before the internet, before even radio or phones are ubiquitous. Nowadays, if someone discovers something big, the whole world can know about it in a matter of minutes. But back then, getting news out could take months, years, or in this case, decades. It wasn't until 1895 when more action was taken to slow the use of morphine and opiates broadly. For one, advances in medicine probably helped by providing alternatives and preventing diseases. Aspirin, for example, would be debuted in 1899, which is actually what we'll talk about next week. Education about the problem also helped, and it became taboo among doctors to overprescribe. Textbooks from the 1890s would call doctors that prescribed too much morphine lazy, incompetent, poorly trained, and out of touch. All things that nobody wants to be. New laws would also come into play. Between 1895 and 1915, many states passed laws restricting the sale of opiates without a valid prescription. If you can believe it, opium and morphine used to be sold as over-the-counter drugs. As doctors began pushing the drug less, it became more associated with opium dens, often frequented by Chinese immigrants and poor white Americans. This would change the image around addiction for the worse, associating the drug with foreigners and poor people, both often considered undesirable at the time. This led to a push for even more regulation, eventually resulting in a federal ban on opium in 1909, punishing possession of the drug with 2 years in prison. There is, of course, much more to the story of opiate drugs, but I'm going to stop there for now. The 1900s is when we see a decline in the usage of morphine for some of the reasons we talked about, but I mentioned in passing that aspirin came into use around this time, which definitely deserves some attention too. So next week, let's learn about how aspirin came to be. As always, thanks for listening. If you want to contact me for whatever reason, try the links in the show notes. Also, sorry this episode's a little bit late, I had a very hectic week. Thank you also to Jojo Tang for editing, Angie Lee for our cover art, and MuseOpen for this music.